This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last time, Ruby and Douglas Woods talked over a late night supper. Later, Ruby took stock of her situation and strengthened her resolve never to look back. Can she get past the shadow of her former life?
It was late afternoon when Ruby got back to Arcadia. She paused at the front door and took a deep breath. An odoriferous cloud of steam and noise from the kitchen assailed her before she got as far as the kitchen doorway. Something bubbled in a large stock pot on the back of one of the two stoves. The element hissed. Cigarette smoke was layered in the air with the steam. No one seemed to notice that the radio was not quite on the station. The music was tortured behind the babble of talk and laughter. Evidently, the kitchen was the place where the residents and their friends socialized. One end of the long table was spread with sheets of newspaper. Vegetable peelings littered a headline highlighting new evidence of Nazi atrocities. A large cleaver rested on the meat-stained board beside a large pile of wet, leafy stuff. Bert, the cremator of toast, sat at the table with an open tin of tobacco, rolling one cigarette after another, lining them up to put back in the tin. The mute woman who muttered to herself was busy marking a copy of Best Bets. Ruby didn't see Edie at first. There she was, leaning across the table, watching a stocky, bearded man in an old army jacket use the cleaver to scrape whatever he'd been chopping off the board into the boiling cauldron. Edie grinned up at her.
"Guess what we're having, Mum?"
Then, turning to the cook,
"What did you say it was, Mr. Kahu?"
"Boil up," came the reply.
To be polite, Ruby gave a quick smile. "Come along, Edie," she said. Ron, who'd been in charge of sausages at breakfast, leaned against the bench with his big enamel mug.
"Girlie's been good as gold," he said. "Ruby, this is Harry, back from up country with a bit of wild pig for us."
As a murmur of appreciative comments about Harry and his boil-up went around the room. Harry gave Ruby a wink and chopped at the bunch of stalky green leaves. Where was Pim? Why wasn't she watching Edie? They had to get out of this place. "Come along, Edie," Ruby repeated. "Now." Edie slid off her chair and leaned against her mother.
"Oh, there you are, Mrs. Barton."
It was Mrs. Thompson. She tightened her lips around her cigarette holder.
"Can I have a word?"
"Thank you for the jumper," Ruby said, following Mrs. Thompson to the empty dining room.
"It looks good on you. Nice to know it came in useful."
"I didn't see Pim," said Ruby.
"Pim says she's poorly today, but the child was no trouble. Clever little thing, isn't she?"
Mrs. Thompson tapped a finger on the length of the cigarette holder. A curl of ash fell into an ashtray. She sucked on the mouthpiece and blew a slow stream of smoke.
"I wonder, Mrs. Barton, do you do any sewing? I've got a couple of things that want mending."
There it was. As much as Ruby was willing to help out, she now cursed herself for earlier having felt grateful. For the jumper, for accepting the offer of minding Edie. Gratitude for acts of kindness that turned out to have been transactions. Debts to be redeemed sooner or later.
People like Mrs. Thompson have the ability to smell desperation a mile off. Years of humiliation were compressed in her gut, and she wasn't going to let this woman add to it.
"Mending," she said. "I've got a skirt. Needs the hem taking down. And another wants a placket repaired. I'd do it myself, but my hands..."
Ruby had noticed the gnarled arthritic fingers.
"What about socks?" Mrs. Thompson said. "Can you darn socks?"
"I'm not very good at darning," said Ruby. "I can't seem to help making lumps." That was a lie. Still, she had to draw a line somewhere.
"As it is, I'm seeing someone tomorrow about a day's work. I have to get something soon, or I'm not sure what we're going to do."
Mrs. Thompson breathed smoke out of her nostrils.
"Well, if you're prepared to do a bit of work around the place, I'm sure I can see my way clear to let you stop here till you're sorted out."
"I'll see." Ruby thought about her diminished funds.
"Wait here and I'll fetch that mending now," said Mrs. Thompson. "I'll bring a sewing kit. You'll still have time to go out looking for work. I'm not sure what you're looking for. There's factory work, of course, the knitting mills."
Ruby tried to frame the question politely.
"If I do your sewing..." "I can shift the pair of you into a double room."
Mrs. Thompson sucked on her cigarette holder.
"Down at the far end. Number 5. It's got 2 beds in there."
She must have read the unspoken query on Ruby's face.
"I can let you have it for £6 for the week. Can't do better than that."
Sitting on the edge of the bed next to Edie, Ruby stopped stitching Mrs. Thompson's dark grey skirt. The light wasn't good enough. Tucking the bedclothes around Edie, she decided there was little point taking her to task about spending time with the men. The muttering woman wouldn't have been much help. Still, they might be decent sorts after all. Trouble is, you can never tell. "In a few days, we're moving to another room," she said, trying to make it sound like a grand improvement.
"We'll have a bed each."
In truth, Mrs. Thompson's offer had deepened the hole they were in. Unless things changed, by the end of next week they'd have nothing left and still owe money.
"How long are we going to be here? At this place?"
Edie was frowning.
"I don't know. Not long, I hope. Let's not think about it right now." "Are we going to do anything interesting tomorrow?"
"You're staying here with Mrs. Thompson. She's already agreed. She likes you, you know, chicken." Edie screwed up her face.
"Aw, that's not fair. When are we going into town together? I haven't seen anything yet."
"No use making that face. The wind'll change and you'll end up looking dopey for the rest of your life."
"But, Mum..."
"Besides, the holidays haven't started. What will people think if they see you're not at school?" Edie shrugged. "You're getting on my nerves," Ruby said. "I've told you already, I have to get a job, and that's that."
"Can't you get a dancing job at night like you had before?"
"No. No, I'm not doing that anymore." Ruby gathered up the sewing things. "Now you snuggle down. I'm going downstairs with Mrs. Thompson's skirt repair, where the light's better."
"When will you be back?"
There was still a little whine in Edie's voice. "When I've finished this placket. Now go to sleep." Robert Louis Stevenson's Kidnapped was splayed, face down on the chair.
"Don't leave books like that," said Ruby,
adding, "Would you like to read for a while?"
"Can I?"
"Go on then. Snuggle down. I'll leave the light on. You've been to the lab, haven't you?"
"Yes."
"Good. I'll lock the door and take the key."
"Are you going to talk to Mr. Woods?"
"Mind your own business." She gently tweaked Edie's nose, then kissed the top of her head. "Mr. Woods might have gone to bed. Night-night, chicken."
The shriek of the kettle was a brief burst, stopped by Douglas Woods pouring water into Pim's smallest teapot. The strum of a guitar and singing was coming from the lounge. She and Douglas Woods had the kitchen to themselves.
Right on cue, Mrs. Barton.
He smoothed a knitted tea cosy over the pot.
Miss Barton tucked up, is she?
Ruby answered. Where's everyone else?
Some of them are in the lounge, listening to the radio. There's a new quiz show on. All rather crass. Some chap keeps shouting, "By hokey!" Tea?
He poured pale tea.
Milk?
Thanks. I want to work on this. She showed him the bundled up sewing work. You don't mind, do you, Mr. Woods? He pulled a chair out for her and sat opposite.
I say, please drop the Mr. Woods handle. My name is Douglas.
I'm Ruby.
Yes, I picked that up during dinner.
Ruby bent over her work. The evening was warm. The back door had been left open to air the place after Harry's boil-up.
I know I shouldn't ask, he stammered. I just wondered.
A moth bashed its wings inside the glass light shade. He sipped his tea. She put her sewing aside, shut the door and sat down again. You weren't going to ask me what a nice girl like me is doing in a place like this, were you? I might just have to kick you in the shins, Mr. Douglas Woods. Douglas grinned.
I was going to say that I get the impression you're from somewhere out of town. I certainly haven't seen you around. Arcadia seems a strange place.
To find a lone woman with a child?
Really, I didn't mean to be rude. I'm sorry.
She pressed her lips together. Was she going to tell him she was a widow? And all the fictions that went with it? Or let him think she'd been discarded? At least he had the decency to ask. The tink, tink, tink of the light-trapped moth filled the silence. When she looked into the blue eyes of Douglas Woods, she saw no prurience or malice, no sign of the predatory flirtatiousness she was used to seeing in men's eyes. Now she wanted to fight her way past the usual impulse to mask herself. She decided to test him with a small portion of the recent truth. We got off the train from Auckland and I found this place. She chewed her lip. It's just for the time being until I find a job. You don't know of anything going, do you? Something temporary?
A job? I'm sorry, I don't, he said. I shouldn't have pried.
Never mind, she said too brightly, giving her head a little shake to show him it hadn't mattered. Do you say that often? Say things you shouldn't? What about you? What's a nice chap like you?
Touché.
His laugh was brief.
Arcadia House? It's cozy. I like the relaxed atmosphere. Nobody asks questions. People here leave you alone.
Now it's my turn to pry, she said. Should people ask you questions? Where's your wife? Douglas held his cup in both hands, moving the contents about.
Not married.
Oh, she said wearily.
I was, he said with sadness. I got married just before I was posted out.
Ruby picked up her stitching. She'd heard variations of the same story since the war had ended. It was almost a cliché. Boys went away and came back broken men. Girls married their best crush, then found somebody else while he was away, and got thrown out when someone snitched. Or worse, when the dates of a baby's arrival didn't match up.
Alison was a good sort, he said. Before the war, we knocked about together all the time. Tennis, church socials and so on. Our families knew each other. She was a divine dancer. I liked her tremendously. Looking back, I think we were chums rather than sweethearts.
He pulled his cigarette case out of his pocket, opened it. The tobacco smelled sweet. She glanced up to see he was offering her a cigarette and declined with a wave of her hand. He drew on his cigarette.
You don't want to hear my story. I was asking about you.
There's not much to mine, she said. I'm interested in Allison.
Oh, you know, he said. Our parents wanted us to get engaged, so we did. We did what was expected of us without thinking much about it.
Ruby knotted the final stitch of Mrs. Thompson's hem and bit the thread.
When I found out I was getting posted overseas, the rush was on to get married before I went. There wasn't time for a honeymoon. When I saw her again after DMOB, I think we both realized it was a dreadful mistake.
How did the parents take that?
Badly.
Was there a child?
That was never going to be likely.
He pulled deeply on his cigarette, blew a slow stream of smoke.
I was a bit lost for a while. I came here to Palmerston North. I was here as a student. Had some idea I'd be a vet.
Did you?
He shook his head.
What happened to Allison?
Poor girl. Probably happily married by now, with a family and all that goes with it.
What about you? He sprang out of his chair, clicked his heels and gave an arcing mock bow.
Good afternoon, madam. I'm your Bonbrush man.
He assumed a plummy voice, pantomiming the doff of a hat. She laughed, applauding. Oh, God, that bad?
Not really, he laughed dryly. I quite like it. It's all acting, after all. You'd be surprised at the people you meet. I could write a book.
And he'd be surprised if he knew the people she'd met. If she wrote a book, she'd be sued. Taking their teacups to the sink, rinsing them. The only thing to do after that. You should be on the stage, she said.
I was, before.
His voice trailed off. Before the war, Ruby said gravely. Afterwards, couldn't you have gone back to it? Don't they have something here?
Something. Douglas sat forward. You wouldn't believe it. Palmerston North has almost as many theatres as pubs. Operatic society, repertory, all sorts. Some of them going strong since the last century. You won't have seen our opera house, as splendid as anything you'll see anywhere. Before the war, the citizenry was spoiled for choice when it came to stage shows. We had plenty of work.
Who's we?
A friend and I. Frank Pierce. Frank has had genuinely outstanding talent.
Had? Said Ruby. He didn't answer the question. Instead, he sighed as he crushed his cigarette into the ashtray.
Frank and I met doing a review. Trod the boards and all that.
His voice dropped and he gazed into nowhere.
Oh, it's a long story.
Ruby decided it had been too pleasant an evening to probe into the depths of anyone else's sadness. It's late, she said, throwing him the tea towel and picking up Mrs. Thompson's skirt. Hope you don't mind finishing up. I have to get up early.
Taking young Edie into town?
No, I'm seeing someone about a job. It wasn't so much a lie as a hope.
Better say goodnight, then.
He rose to his feet.
And good luck.
Thanks. That was nice. She meant it. A gust blasted a cold draft up her skirt, and bronze-coloured leaves from the square scudded across her feet. She passed several businesses without mustering the heart to go in. Mentally subtracting the price of a cup of hot chocolate from the capital in her purse, weighed against a more sensible purchase of hair clips, she didn't notice where her feet were taking her. When she turned a corner for respite from the wind, she came to a halt in front of a defiant display of colour in a shop window. Her gasp of surprise was like a cry, and she glanced over her shoulder. If anyone had heard her, they weren't letting on. Behind the glass was just the sight she needed to lift her spirits. "How beautiful," she murmured. The background of the window display was taken up by a 3-panel folding canvas screen, painted with broad, sweeping strokes of bright orange, cross-hatched with broad brush strokes in a coppery tone. The area was carpeted with artificial autumn leaves, out of which stood 3 chrome poles, each one holding a single hat. The voguish, cream-coloured hat with a wide brim sitting on the centre pole drew her. The window dresser knew it would bravely shine out against the orange. A blue hat was trimmed with smoothed feathers, coloured to match the hat's shade of pale blue. On the other side was a pearl-grey skullcap, decorated with pearlized beads stitched to a pleated sweep of matching netting, which was drawn to one side and tucked underneath. High on the window was one word, in mirrored silver. Vardo. She closed her eyes. When she opened them, to take in the window display once more, placed against one of the poles, she saw a neatly written cardboard sign. Help wanted. 1 to 2 days for a lady to do hand stitching. Experience imperative. Inquire within.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.